everyone. Welcome to the Middle East today. Coming to you from Beirut, I'm Maryam Saleh. In Bahrain, many peaceful protesters are still being killed after inhaling poisonous tear gas fired by the Bahraini forces. The kingdom continues to hold hundreds of prisoners who have received unjust sentences, as rights activists are saying. One activist taken prisoner, Abdelhadi Al-Khawaja, who has been protesting his life sentence through a hunger strike, is believed to be in a critical condition. The main Bahraini opposition group, Al-Wifaq, has called on international community to intervene and press for the release of Khawaja. Now, to get more on this issue, I am joined by Professor Hilal Khashan, professor at the American University of Beirut. I'm also joined by Mr. Saeed Shahabi from the Bahrain Freedom Movement. And I want to welcome you both to this show. Let me start with you, Professor Khashan. Does the crisis that's happening inside Bahrain, does it fall under the category of a humanitarian crisis, something that needs the intervention of the international community? I mean, we've seen this in other countries, like, for example, Syria. The United Nations Security Council has been meeting for that, for the sake of Syria, saying that there is a humanitarian situation. Doesn't Bahrain fall under this category?
It sure does. But let's face it, the agencies that activate humanitarian intervention are controlled by the West. And the West has been applying this instrument of humanitarian intervention rather selectively.
So we might not see any clear intervention, this is what you're saying, anytime soon.
I do not expect the Western agencies that control the issue of humanitarian intervention to interfere in Bahrain. In fact, the West tolerated the entry of Bahrain by Saudi troops to restore, quote-unquote, law and order. So I don't think the West is considering any sort of humanitarian intervention there, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me ask Mr. Saeed Shahabi, as a member of course, the Bahraini opposition, how will the opposition deal with this issue since the humanitarian situation seems to be growing? What is the next step? I mean, you have not called for the ouster of the kingdom. You've just called for reform, but things seem to be getting worse. What is the next step for you?
I think the hunger strike by Abdelhadi Al-Khawaja has brought the situation in Bahrain to the forefront of the international agenda. I don't think the United States or Britain, who are not interested in any change in the region, can any longer ignore the plight of the Bahraini people. They cannot continue their support to the regime without any conditions. And also, they cannot ignore the calls from the international human rights bodies, such as Amnesty International, and the Human Rights Watch and others, which have called to the immediate and unconditional release of Khawaja, including Amnesty International's report today, in which she called for the immediate release of Khawaja. So both UK and the United States cannot ignore that. And then we go to the European Union, of which Denmark is an integral part. And as we know, Abdelhadi Al-Khawaja has a Danish passport. That does not mean that he should be removed from Bahrain to Denmark. I don't think that's a good answer to the crisis. But Abdelhadi must remain in Bahrain, must be released, not only himself, but all the rest of the prisoners, because they are prisoners of conscience who have been detained because of their expression of opinion and nothing more. Now, what the people want, we have to ask the people, what do you want? We have to give them the right to self-determination. We have to ask them whether they want to remain loyal to an enemy which has proven that it is the enemy of people, which is the Al-Khalifa clan, or to they want to have their own say in running their country in accordance with a constitution
yes.
that they write themselves. So I think that we are going forward and pushing forward with the agenda for real change and not superficial one.
Yes, how can countries like Denmark and perhaps groups like Amnesty International, how can they play a role into making these demands actual actions from the international community, that there is intervention inside Bahrain to stop these life sentences, to stop the attacks on protesters and so on?
Well, I think there are quite few options that are open to them. We are not asking for armed intervention, military intervention in the country, because we do not need that. I think we are capable, our people are capable of bringing down the regime. In fact, we have succeeded in bringing down the Al-Khalifa clan last year. Within a month after the revolution, the regime just collapsed. And this is why the Saudi invasion came. Why, otherwise, how do you explain the Saudi incursion into Bahrain other than to prop up the regime after it has collapsed? It just became hopeless and useless. So this regime can only stand on its feet with the support of the United States. And the decision should come from Washington. Because these regimes do not have the independence in opinion or in policies. They have to refer to Washington. And this is why the Al-Khalifa have refused to acknowledge the calls for the release. And they tried to appear as if they are ready to challenge the world. Mm-hmm. I think the only reason for doing that is because they feel they are strong enough because of the support of America. Because of America is with us, we can do anything. We can kill, we can torture, we can detain, we can expel, we can send our thugs to regions like what happened last night when they sent all their thugs to the towns of Al-Akir and Nuweirat and so on. So I think the problem and the obstacle to change is the United States, unfortunately, as it has always been the case.
Yes, thank you. Professor Khashan, how do you think the groups like Amnesty International and so on, they have just asked for the Bahraini kingdom to release the prisoners, they have asked them to stop the crackdown. Can these translate into actions in any way if there is a strong stance from some nations?
Yeah, I mean, groups, agencies such as Amnesty International have the capacity to perform the role of soft power. Soft power functions well in democratic and transparent political systems. I'm afraid to say that in systems such as Bahrain or others, soft power doesn't play a role in deciding policy. Therefore, I don't really expect Amnesty International efforts in this regard to play a crucial role. Having said that, I clearly believe that the Bahraini government is committing a great, gross mistake by letting Mr. Khawaja face his destiny, because that would serve as a new spark for a larger uprising. You know, here you have a humanitarian situation that has to be dealt with immediately. Mm-hmm. We have no proof, no solid evidence to suggest that the man was conspiring to oust the regime.
Mm-hmm. Yes, now how far do you think this will go, especially since the protesters up until now, they have been peaceful protesters, they have not been armed, whereas you see protesters or opposition forces inside Syria, for example, armed and being supported by the West. What is the difference between the two, the contradiction? Some analysts believe that there is clear double standards, and Bahrain is an example of that.
Well, of course. You know, the U.S. has commitment to Saudi Arabia, and the commitment goes back to 1944-45 when they signed the strategic agreement. And Saudi Arabia, the regime there, considers Bahrain an area of vital interest. Therefore, U.S. policy on Saudi Arabia and Bahrain is identical, and the Americans acquiesce to Saudi pressures when it comes to Bahrain. Having spoken about international intervention, let's not really expect much from international intervention. Even in the case of Syria, the extent of international intervention hasn't been able to alter the situation on the ground. The ability of the international community to act and to act with success depends to a very large degree on the willingness of the concerned countries to apply pressure.
Yes, but they have been financing, for instance, the opposition in Syria, whereas other opposition in Bahrain, for example, has had no support, even voice.
Yeah, of course, Syria is a contested ground between different groups, whereas Bahrain is not seen as an area of contested grounds, and the Americans accept the hegemony of Saudi Arabia there. This is the difference.
Yes, clear. That seems to be clear. We're joined on the phone by Mr. Mike Lane. He is consultant for Intelfant Strategies. He's joining us on the phone from Washington. The question we want to ask you is the U.S. strategy in Bahrain. It seems to be quite quiet concerning the situation in Bahrain. Is it letting Saudi Arabia just take control of the situation over there? Some analysts believe there has been double standards for the West in general, specifically the United States, for how they're dealing with the issues in Syria and in Bahrain, that they call the situation in Syria a humanitarian crisis, whereas in Bahrain it's not being put into that category, although the situation is dire.
It appears to me that the Obama administration is treating the Bahrain situation much differently than a lot of the other aspects of the Arab Spring, which continues now in Syria. In Bahrain, what it seems that the Obama administration, is treating the entire circumstance with what we might call benign neglect, allowing the Saudis to take the lead on the whole thing. Perhaps President Obama has decided that the United States is stretched too thin. We have other obligations. We are trying really to become less engaged in internal affairs in many countries in the Middle East, and it's the exception to the rule rather than conforming and consistent with the way that we've treated Egypt, with the way that we've treated Libya, with what looks like is on the horizon with Syria, and Bahrain is the odd country out in the consistency of the Obama policy.
Yes, what do you think that is specifically? Do you think that we might see a change to that if throughout the U.S. presidential elections or after the presidential elections? How do you look at it from here?
I believe that, yes, after the presidential elections, which are now only about 7 months away in the United States, you will see a more activist policy no matter who is elected, particularly, I think, if Governor Romney, the Republican, is victorious in November. His foreign policy is a little bit more activist, a little bit more engaging than President Obama likes to have American foreign policy do so. I believe that you would see a President Romney more actively engaged in partnering with Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Bahrain situation, as well as other situations, whereas it appears now that President Obama is willing to just let the Saudis handle the whole thing from their perspective. Certainly, I believe that that President Obama is consulting on a regular basis with the Saudi government, but as far as active involvement is concerned, it may pick up if he's reelected, or it may not. He may be very comfortable in just saying this is not the United States' interest, and I would disagree with that, of course, because we have very substantial interests over in the region, and particularly in Bahrain. We have an entire fleet, so it's very important to us.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I wanted to ask you about, the fact that there is military presence in Bahrain. Doesn't the U.S. fear, or aren't they concerned about that presence, that things might get out of hand if it seems to the Bahraini opposition that the U.S. is completely supporting the Bahraini crackdown on its people?
You know, the one thing about the Obama administration's approach to the entire Middle East is it's consistent, inconsistent. If you know, they would argue very strongly, and I think somewhat appropriately, that they've taken each country and each issue on a case-by-case basis, and they've formulated the policy as to how to approach Egypt. They've formulated a different policy as to how to approach Libya. They are formulating a different policy as to how to approach Syria. On the Bahrain situation, it seems that they have not decided that they want to have a policy other than to stand back. And of course, you know, we have the ability to become very heavily involved because of our presence there at any time we might want to. But the active involvement is not there, and that's inconsistent with the way the Obama administration has approached the rest of the rest of the issues in the Middle East.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Mike Lane. Mr. Shahabi, my question to you now concerning the Bahraini uprising seems to be taken out of the realm of the major Arab changes in what the West has called the Arab Spring. Why do you think that is? What are their interests in doing that?
Let me point the following. Number one, I think Bahrain is the largest and most populous and consistent revolution in the Arab world for several reasons. A, it has never stopped since it started at all. Every night, including last night and today, there have been demonstrations, at least 25 to 30 demonstrations every day. And this is all documented on YouTube and in some news bulletins. Number two, Bahrainis have been almost unanimous. The number of people taking part in those demonstrations is exceedingly high. If you take it by percentages, you will see that it is among the largest, probably the largest revolution in terms of population or ratio of participants compared to the population. Number three, it is very clear. It is the oldest, because I don't think you have any other revolution that has its roots going back to the 1920s non-stop over the decades. So I think the revolution will continue, and it is not going this time. It is not going to stop at any cost, regardless of what the Saudis or the Americans do, because the people have had enough over the decades, and they are unlikely to accept less than a total overhaul of the system.
Yes. Now, do you think, Mr. Shahabi, that this might have a financial effect on the tourism, perhaps in Bahrain? We heard that perhaps the Formula One race will be annulled in Bahrain as a result of the protests going on. Do you think that at least in that case, they will have made a stance?
I think over the past 12 months, we have seen that the effect of the revolution has been catastrophic to the regime. Al-Khalifa today are not the Al-Khalifa of a year ago or 2 years ago. They were bubbly. They were trying to show the world that they are pro-democracy. They are pro-Western. They are open, liberals, and so on. Today, they are seen and viewed by the West as villains, as pariah state. They are seen as torturers, especially after it was confirmed by their own investigation commission that they did commit systematic torture, they did commit extrajudicial killing, they did destroy mosques. So they are seen as very backward, reactionary, repressive dictators. Number two, they are also seen, even from among their own friends, the Formula One is the flagship of their own economic development. It is in tatters. I do not believe that F1 is going to go back to Bahrain. Only yesterday, Ben Ecclestone talked to by phone to my daughter and informed her, what do you want?
Yes.
We will allow you to have a press conference at the Formula One. But she told them that the people do not want Formula One to be held at this time in Bahrain.
Yes,
Formula One is not going to take place, and many other conferences and exhibitions have cancelled their presence in Bahrain because Bahrain is no longer the safe haven it wants to show itself to be.
Yes. We're joined on the phone by Mr. Saleh Ahmed, rights activist. He's joining us from Manama. Mr. Ahmed, what can you tell us about the latest on the condition of Mr. Al-Khawaja, the protesters there, of course, and do they believe that this life sentence is merely political, or all the sentences of all the prisoners are political and not, of course, as a result of the protests that went on inside the country?
Hello. Mr. Abdelhadi met the Danish ambassador yesterday. He refused taking water for a whole day and to show his refusal for the way he was treated. The Danish ambassador described his condition as critical condition. We think that the charges against Mr. Abdelhadi were all induced politically. Because he was calling for democracy.
Yes,
the ICR report that was issued by the committee hired by the king said that he was tortured and that all charges related to freedom of speech should be dropped. But yet, he was not released.
And as protesters, what are your plans? Do you plan to continue protests on a daily basis in order to ask for the release of Mr. Al-Khawaja?
Yes, every day there are protests in many places. Mr. Abdelhadi is a very known activist in Bahrain. He's one of the activists that were active on many cases for unemployment, for different human rights, prisoner rights, and he's very loved in the nation. So there's daily protests in many places calling for his freedom.
All right, Mr. Saleh Ahmed, rights activist joining us from Manama. I want to thank you very much for being with us. Professor Khashan, I want to ask you a little bit about the role of Saudi Arabia here. We've heard how Saudi Arabia has been very articulate when it comes to supporting the opposition in Syria and perhaps in other places. But at the same time, for instance, in Yemen, it seems to be, for example, giving refuge to Abdullah Saleh, even Ben Ali, and now even Mubarak elements are also being supported by Saudi Arabia. Why do you think that is? Why is Saudi Arabia's role to this extent?
I mean, Saudi Arabia's role depends on the situation in which an uprising is taking place. In Yemen, they see society there as tribal, and Saudi Arabia for many years has been active among Yemeni tribes. For years, they felt that competition could come to them from Yemen. Therefore, they co-opted most of the large tribes in Yemen. Therefore, their aim has been to maintain the status quo in Yemen and to prevent a successful revolution from occurring, and they succeeded so far in containing the situation in Yemen, and they transformed the event there into a civil war, as we are witnessing, especially in the southern part of the Yemen. In Egypt, the loss of Mubarak was a deep personal loss for the Saudi royals, and they have been trying to make sure that the man does not stand trial. Okay. In Syria, the regime, the Saudi regime, is presenting itself as the protector of the Syrian people, and they appear to be behaving in that manner. In Yemen, in Bahrain, they are concerned about the eastern province of Saudi Arabia.
They feel this extending into their own.
Yeah,
land.
They feel that any progress, any achievements made by Bahrainis are bound to reflect on the status in the eastern province.
Of perhaps the opposition groups inside inside the kingdom, the Saudi kingdom itself. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to stop right there. Our time has run out. Sure. Professor Hilal Khashanal, thank you very much for being with us. I want to thank Mr. Saeed Shahabi for joining us in London. We were also joined by Mr. Mike Lane in Washington and Mr. Saleh Ahmed from Manama. Our email is metoday@presstv.com. Goodbye for now.